Der Mode-Podcast. Wenn der spanische Fischer Rodriguez sein Boot am Hafen festmacht, hieft er neben Dorsch jede Menge Plastikmüll an Land. Was früher wieder zurückgeworfen wurde, alte Badelatschen, Plastikflaschen, Aldi-Tüten, zerrissene Netze, ist heute begehrtes Rohmaterial in der Sustainable Fashion Industrie. Einer der Vorreiter für die Wiederverwertung von Plastik ist EcoAlf, ein spanisches Modeunternehmen. Upcycling the Oceans nennt sich das Projekt und ich wollte wissen, was die größte Herausforderung, was die schönsten Momente und was die härtesten Rückschläge für EcoAlf sind und waren. So, ein bisschen aus der Hetze, tut mir wirklich leid. Es ist wieder soweit, Zeit für den Modcast. Wir haben hier wieder eine Aufzeichnung im Flughafen Tempelhof, wo zu diesem Zeitpunkt auch die Neonit stattfindet. Das ist die Messe für Innovation und Nachhaltigkeit in der Mode. Und das ist natürlich auch ein großes Thema bei uns. Auch heute mit unserem heutigen Gast, der deutschen Sprache nicht so mächtig ist. Und auch mein Spanisch ist da nicht besonders gut. Deswegen verweilen wir denn heute mal auf Englisch. Und das Gute ist, wenn du so Sponsoren hast, dann kannst du auch mal hier kurz so eine kleine Pause machen. Moment. Geöffnet ist die Fritz-Limo. Damit haben wir jetzt auch unsere Werbeschuldigkeit getan. Und erfrischen kann ich mich auch noch. Aber zu unserem Gast, Carolina Alvarez Osorio. Welcome, and I hope I pronounced the name correct.
Correct.
Did I have to come up with a Spanish lisp just to sound, make it more genuine?
It sounds perfect.
All right. It's a pleasure to have you here amongst us because people need to know that the reason that I got more into this entire sustainability talk is pretty much because I came across, I mean, a friend of mine, she has this one agency, which is like Press Factory, which are representing you here in Germany, as far as I understand. And I was introduced to the brand, and then I was curious because you were also like very about communication when it comes to the topic sustainability itself. And here we are now sitting together. And I would like to, of course, not only introduce you as a person, introduce also the brand EcoAlf, for whom you work within the marketing. You are responsible for all of this. And going further into what the EcoAlf Foundation is about. And therefore, again, having the head of marketing and communication for one of the most exciting sustainable fashion brands in Europe, that must be quite challenging, or is it quite rewarding? We are here at a fair which is dedicated to sustainable innovation, so this must be old stuff for you, or do you feel kind of confirmed about your path, about EcoAlf?
I would say confirmed and rewarded for sure. Because we're noticing a big shift in the industry, a big shift in the market and the people's mindset, and we're seeing it from different cultures, different countries, different generations, and it's amazing to see the younger generations are the ones that are really demanding it as well. So I'm super happy to see you again, to join you and to be here, and especially in the environment of Neonit, which I think also feels rewarded because it's something they've been exposing, no, exhibiting for a long time, and now it's becoming a must, and I think it's going to be a standard in the industry.
That's something, of course, we need to talk about. If it's how close we are to have that to be the standard. Also, like one thing that I absolutely forgot is, and the thing is, like, I see you. This is a podcast, so people don't see you. Mm-hmm. Maybe could you describe what you're wearing? I mean, I see some of the labels. You apparently are representing your own brand. So what exactly is it that you're wearing?
So I am wearing the new snow boots, which are made with recycled PET.
Oh, you do snow boots now too?
Yes, snow boots. And with our Because There Is No Planet B claim. Yep. And a new dress for fall winter 20, which is made of Cupro, which is a low environmental impact fiber. Uh-huh. And it's actually the seed of the cotton. So it's something that is historically it's thrown away. So we're giving it a second life. And the feel is, it's like silk. Happy for you to touch it.
Come on, we have witnesses, please.
So it's for women, it's a super feminine touch and super comfortable. Having a positive impact, which is the best part, no? It suits and it fits well and it has a good impact.
You apparently have like a huge variety of stuff, because I also see you even brought a bag with you.
And yes, my best friend. So this is the accessories line that we are launching, and basically it's just to make your life easier, no?
Right.
Fit your iPad, your notebook, your wallet, everything that you need in a bag that is always with you.
Apparently, you're doing your job quite well. You represent also the company, which has been founded in Spain. This is the reason why we speak English, because apparently, as many times you've been here to Germany, your German hasn't really much improved. And for me, it's like, hey, ¿qué tal? That's pretty much all my Spanish. But again, you're used to it, because before you worked for Echo Alf, we need to know about you. You actually coming from the cosmetic industry.
Yes.
I mean, also the cosmetic industry has been also about sustainability. Has that been the reason why you switched over into the clothing market, or what has been your path from the cosmetic to sustainable clothes?
To be honest, I was for a very long time in the US, mm-hmm. Abroad for over 10 years, in beauty, in cosmetics, and always working in marketing and creating stories, no? Coming up with the stories and how to inspire and how to create the necessity that you need something. And it was time to return back home and to return to Spain. And I was looking for challenging opportunities in Spain, and I came across Echo Alf, which I didn't know before, and I came across the brand, what the brand is doing, and the Ocean Project, the foundation, which I completely felt attracted to, and to see that it's not so much about creating stories and creating necessities, because we're experiencing the opposite, no? We're experiencing that we need to find reality and things that really make a difference, which to me was Echo Alf when I found it, and I wanted to be part of it and to be part of the warriors of trying to go against the current, mm-hmm. and against the system, to show that there is a way to do things differently. So basically, part of the reason was coming back to Spain, finding this amazing project, and at the end we spent a lot of time, a lot of hours working. It's pretty much at least 60% of your day. So there is a beauty behind that 60% of your day is also trying to make things that will have that will protect the planet. And that will inspire others, and will inspire other industries and other projects to do things in a way that will protect and we preserve the planet in the long term.
So maybe it's now time actually just really to describe it. What kind of clothes does Echo Alf make? And then actually I'm just going to come back to actually the cosmetic industries, because the cosmetics industry has also been criticized for producing what actually Echo Alf is using in order to produce clothes, and what exactly the benefit is of. It has to do with fishing, it has to do with mangoes, with prawns, pretty much everything I know from a cook show, but not really when it comes to clothes.
Yeah. So Echo Alf is basically a new generation of recycled products.
Right.
With the same quality and design as the best non-recycled, no? So we do, we started, as you said, in Spain, it's a Spanish company, in 2009 with the idea, no? Because there was a frustration of the amount of natural resources we're using in a careless way. So the most sustainable was to use recycling materials if you are able to do a design that and a fit that is as cool as a product that is non-recycled.
Right.
And this was the biggest challenge. In 2009, in Spain, you can imagine that the quality that we found was really bad. And
which surprises me, but that's maybe like another topic as well.
We come back.
Yeah.
And then also the mindset. No? People would think that because you use recycling, you're using secondhand or used products.
Right.
So hygienic-wise, design-wise, there was like a bad, like a no, basically. But there's so much innovation and technology behind, no? So it took us 3 years to launch Echo Alf. So Echo Alf really was born in 2012 with backpacks, with menswear, with women's wear. Today we have developed over around, I would say, 400 fabrics using recycled plastic bottles, recycled nylon, which is coming from the fishing nets, recycled coffee, cotton, wool, and we turn them into menswear, women's wear, pants, jackets, sneakers, accessories. Luggage is coming very soon as well. So we try to develop products that are that have a reason behind, that fulfill your necessity, but we don't create a necessity. So we fulfill the necessity to try to be on your journey, on your day-to-day, with a low-impact product, basically.
Well, stepping a bit further already, because you just mentioned that you are not creating a necessity, but you are producing products for necessity. One thing in general when it comes to sustainable, it is really that some designers say, like, listen, it's not really that we're producing anything these days that you really need. This has been like kind of a common thing, because better than to avoid, well, the best way of avoiding any kind of like garbage, trash or whatever is actually not to produce anything at all. So apparently we are at the point where we're producing way too much. So that's pretty much like the biggest challenge, making a business out of something which needs to have a growth, because this is like our capitalistic system that actually requires that in order just to maintain a working company. But at the same time, actually kind of coming up with the mindset like, listen, don't consume as much. I mean, this must be quite a challenge, especially also like in marketing, spreading these kind of infos.
It's a challenge, but it's again, I think it's the mindset that maybe it's exactly what you're saying. Really the most sustainable, and we have to always be real, no, about the needs that we have. The most sustainable would be to consume less. So it's about consuming responsibly, no, and knowing what you're buying as well. So I think it's also about changing the KPIs of how we measure growth. Maybe growth has to be measured in a different way, no? Mm-hmm. Maybe profit is not something that needs to be measured in the P&L of the company. It's different KPIs, and I think that's one of the reasons why we're also a B Corp company, because B Corp companies are companies recognized not being the best in the world, but the best for the world. So I think that's one of the things that we do a lot at EcoAlf. We spend a lot of time talking with people, giving talks, presenting, and talking about the Upcycling the Oceans project or what's going on in the world, with the hope, obviously, to raise awareness on the need to protect the planet, but also, and on the need to act, but also on inspiring others, no, and to show that there is a way. Because when we start in 2009 until we launched in 2012, those 3 years were no, it wasn't easy, and still today is still not easy, even though yes, we have platforms like Neonit, which is fantastic, magazines that are now showing sustainability and talking about sustainability, but it really needs to turn into a standard, and it really needs the action of everybody.
And this is also very tricky when it comes to that awareness, because as much as I love like the fashion business, sometimes I hate the fashion business for what it is. I like the artistic part of it. I like really the development of things. I like the communication. But of course, it's a business, so people need to make money, and then some executive decisions have to be made that are not really pleasant, but somebody has to do it. So it's always like in between, but I don't think it's going to change if I turn my back to it. I'm always looking for that type of communication. And what's kind of frustrating, and it's just a sense, it's like an emotion which I have, when sometimes I hear people talk about sustainability, it comes very close to this term of greenwashing, that sometimes you really feel that some people feel like, just like when the internet came up, companies said, oh, internet is a big thing, my daughter's using it, we need to be on the internet. And how genuine and honest do you feel is really that movement of the companies these days? Because maybe in numbers, how far or how big is the number of recycled goods these days, exactly, which reflect that what we're talking about?
I think the most simple way to see it for me is that if a sustainable collection is being launched that only represents 2% of your sales, then we're
2%
talking about...
2% is not really that much.
then we're talking about the word you just said, no?
Right.
So it's that greenwashing. But then again, this is the conflict that I have. But then again, they are raising awareness and they're big players in the industry. So I think all the efforts still are welcomed.
Are they really?
I think it's important, even if it's small, it's important, it's happening and they're doing it. And what I think is that it's not going to last. They're going to have to change the business model and they're going to have to shift the way they're doing, not just one part of their business, but everything.
But let's come up with an example. Again, you coming from the cosmetic industry. I don't know if you ever heard of the brand called Sante, which is doing like organic cosmetics. It's like a tiny German brand, or it used to be a tiny German brand, which got acquired by L'Oreal. Because, you know, they got bigger, there's kind of a higher demand for organic cosmetics, so of course they needed help, so L'Oreal would have been like the perfect partner apparently for them. And why not? I mean, this is happening every day for some reason. But I was very surprised that you had like some stores that are bringing or serving organic cosmetics, which at the moment that actually that L'Oreal took over, they actually banned the products out of their stores. Because what they didn't like is the fact that L'Oreal partly is also owned by Nestle. Nestle, of course, in the world of sustainability and we love the world and water and all kind of things, had to deal with harsh criticism. That would be actually the topic for a different kind of podcast. But this is like where I ask myself the question, is that the right consequence to go for? Oh, you big company, you want to be part of it? No, we don't want to work with you. How far is that really working for sustainability from the customers or even like the resellers that feel like, oh, we have to really make sure that not everybody should produce something sustainable?
I think everybody will have to produce sustainably. I think sustainability is also a very complex and very wide
this is what we hear.
Concept.
Yeah.
So it's very easy. No, yes, I'm sustainable because I'm doing a donation to help a social project or to help a natural project. So there's different ways to come about it. But I think also at the moment we're small right now, the ones that are doing it, and we need technology and innovation. And technology and innovation is something that maybe the big players are the ones that can provide as well. So I think for sure everybody needs to step in. All the efforts for me are good, even though it could be greenwashing, of course, but they are raising awareness and they are acknowledging that they're treating it as a trend more than anything, but it means that in the long term, it won't last. So they will have to change the strategy.
But exactly, that's my point. I would expect that consumers who are into sustainability should actually embrace that thing, and because that would send a message to any kind of corporation. That's what I feel, saying like, oh, you're offering that? Okay, now I invest. That would be in kind of an index for the company saying like, oh, maybe again, we should enlarge our efforts of being sustainable. But actually by having a boycott or actually pushing them out of the shelf, I don't really see this is going to be helpful.
Yeah, I mean, from the consumer standpoint, I think you have different profiles and different generations that some will see it, some will demand it, some will boycott. There's a lot of movements going on as well that will boycott. But I think at the end it's pressure to the companies, to the corporation, and in order for them not to disappear, to change the way they're doing their products.
Okay, so this is where we are standing right now. And as I said, we introduced you, we introduced the brand Echo Alf itself, and we have kind of made clear this is a very tricky situation altogether. So again, coming back to Echo Alf, because it makes sense as a Spanish company that you actually collecting plastic waste and deal with it in Spain, in Italy, which are neighbors.
Italy, not yet. Soon, hopefully.
Italy, not yet.
Not yet.
But already you're making some further steps to Thai fishermen? I mean, this is not right around the corner.
Yeah. So basically what happened is we started upcycling the oceans in 2015 in the port of Villajoyosa, which is in the south coast of Levante, in the Mediterranean in Spain. And we started with three fishermen where actually the fishermen, they're already going out 12 hours. They go 4 a.m. to 4 p.m. They're fishing, and every time they collect the fish, there's a horrible amount of waste, not just plastic. There's
which they usually would have like thrown back into the ocean.
Exactly, which goes back. So so that's how we started. We put containers so that instead of throwing it into the water, you throw it into this container. Mm. We put bigger containers on the ports to throw it in these bigger containers, and then we collect it every week. It goes into a classification process and then a recycling process, no? Where we keep the plastic and it goes into our recycling process to then transform it into yarn, no? Into flakes, pellets.
May I ask, in between, how big the amount of plastic trash actually is when they do have, when they do fish?
It's around, it's not that much, it's around 10% of what we collect, of everything. So you have glass, you have fishing nets, you have, suddenly you can find a laptop or you can find a bicycle, like there's like random things that come out, terrible, that unfortunately nobody's collecting because it's at the bottom of the ocean, no? Right. And around 75% of the marine waste is at the bottom of the ocean. And it takes around 500 years for plastic to disappear, which turns into microplastics and never disappears, right, really. So so this is part of the reasoning why we, with Eco Alpha, are at the bottom of the ocean, because you don't see it. So it's not so much what you see floating, it's what you don't see. So what you see probably is the tip of the iceberg. And what you don't see is what our fishermen...
75% is like really high, a high amount. I'm just imagining. I think I never in my life ever going to be able just to swim in an ocean.
No, it's...
Well, what you described, that's like the most nasty of things to do.
It's very sad, no? It's very sad because you don't even have to go to far, no? To the islands in the Far East. Mm-hmm. You see it on the Mediterranean, and this is part now of our project. So when this project started in 2015, it was 3 fishermen. Today, we have over 3,000 fishermen, and we are working across around 47 ports in the Mediterranean coast, in the Atlantic, in Spain. We then received a phone call from the government of Thailand,
right,
to replicate the project in Thailand, where we're doing it with the support of the fishermen, but also the scuba divers and beach volunteers, and then basically we're working in 5 islands, and now our biggest challenge is to expand to the rest of the Mediterranean. So we're talking about Italy, Greece, which are probably the next 2 countries joining, France, Lebanon, Morocco. So to be able to really work with over 10,000 fishermen, all these nationalities, taking all this trash, no, from the bottom. Because probably right now the most polluted sea is the Mediterranean, due to the geographic situation and the way it's so close. No, it's like a soup. And you see it in the summer. I'm sure you've been on the beach.
Not that much anymore. I said, I'm not so keen with the ocean. And now, as you described, I see more reasons not to go in there. It's not the shock. I think it's like the plastic poisoning that.
But it's us. The worst thing is that it's us, the humans, that are doing it. No.
Well, exactly. But again, like in between, because I just heard the announcement today that von der Leyen, the European Community, kind of decided just to invest highly within the next decade in terms of like sustainability. So I assume this must be also very rewarding for you, that apparently this would be like one of the steps working on cleaning the Mediterranean Sea. Already within the European Community, we have issues with whatever happens in the Mediterranean Sea. So
yeah.
I think there are a lot of stories which are going to come up in many ways. You said you have like 3,000 fishermen that are actually providing you with plastic trash, for that matter. Is that something that you are you willing just to work with them just to make the cause bigger? Or is it really the necessity of having so many fishermen in order to just have enough sources for your fashion?
It's really it's really the collaboration. Something quite important is that we don't pay them. So it's more about them seeing the challenge and seeing the problem, because they're the ones that are collecting this every day and throwing it back in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are very saddened because their families, they go over generations and generations that work in the water, and they see this situation and they say there's something going wrong, no? So for us is the more the better, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Not from a production standpoint, but more from a cleaning standpoint, because there's so much that the more that are actually helping to take it out, the better. And in the same way, something that they say a lot is it doesn't help, and that we're doing this if the people in the cities are still throwing the garbage on the streets. No, because really, that's where it starts. No, it starts with us.
That's exactly my point. This is what frustrates me the most. You have people who are shouting at companies, but I see sometimes not really the behavior that they expect from others.
Exactly.
And this is like one thing that we also been together at the Fashion Council, and there was this like this little story. I don't know if you were aware because it was told in German, but just to come again, it was this little story about. A woman who was frustrated in a company that some envelopes were made of plastic, and she's like, how can this be? And then I don't know how much truth was in there, but he just like described the situation that after she convinced like the managers just to do something about the plastic envelopment, she drove off in her Porsche Cayenne to like any island, and because her husband was already there actually making sure that actually there have been even like two cars for this ride. And he didn't meant it like cynically, at least he explained it, but he said, well, at least it's a start. But again, when you talk about Fridays for Future, like a Greater Thunberg, what they're actually making people aware is like it's a beginning, time is over. It's about to act right now. But the thing is like, how are we going to do this? How are we going to convince people to do so without using any violence or too many restrictions?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's exactly what you're saying, no? The restrictions part. I think maybe the other way around, no? To praise, to award the ones that are doing it.
Right.
And maybe by putting a award, that's one way, and to incentivize, that's one way I think that could be accelerated. And a different way, I'll come back to it, because it's just... but it's difficult because at the end, you can't do everything at once. And you need partners. And you need the collaboration of all the stakeholders.
By the way, personally, I think we are capable of doing everything at once. If people would just stop focusing always like on one thing, when you're so many people and we always go into this black and white kind of thinking, I think it's never going to change, because like people in Germany, we have the saying like many cooks kind of spoil the meal. Instead of having someone who's like responsible for something, so why not having all the other cooks who are capable of doing things and going for their meals and really reunite those kind of efforts instead of always going for something?
I mean, I think that's kind of like maybe the 2030 agenda and the sustainable development goals, no? Mm-hmm. But then it's putting sustainability and putting these initiatives from all the countries at the priority list and at the first point of the agenda, because that's what happens at the end, no? Suddenly some things come up and then it gets pushed away, no? Carried away. So it's about standing on them and keeping true and doing it. But unfortunately, I think the push is coming from the younger generations and from the smaller ones, and we need to continue to push.
And talking pushing, now finally, let's talk about this foundation. And also through this way, we're also going to make it back to the Thai fishermen, because apparently there is a difference how you deal with the Thai fishermen opposed to those here within Europe. So first and foremost, why did you have to start a foundation? Top of the plain question for that matter.
Well, really was with because of our Upcycling the Oceans project.
Right.
So this was the way for us to build a project where we could sponsor it with people that wanted to help and to clean the oceans.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it possible within from the business part? Isn't it possible just to involve that within the company itself, or what are the regulations or the rules that you have that you need a specific other company to deal with these issues?
Well, because for us, more EcoAlf is the fashion brand, and then we have the Upcycling the Oceans coming with our foundation. No?
Right.
So the foundation has two main objectives. One hand is the project, and on the other hand is the education and to raise awareness. So we have the foundation director who's heading this, no? And she is the one really spending a lot of time trying to find ways to expand our project, but also to educate others and to raise awareness, no, on marine debris and to find different ways of protecting the habitat, basically. And on parallel, we have our EcoAlf, which is the fashion business.
Right.
That is the creation, no, of the products.
Right. And it's through this foundation that actually you've been also like supporting the Thai fishermen, because what I've read is the difference is that instead, at least you are paying those in, you're not paying
we don't pay
Thai fishermen.
Any fishermen.
See, this is the information I had.
I mean, there was a project in France a while back that the government launched paying the fishermen if they return the waste. When the project, which was great, no? So everybody would bring back the waste. When the project ran out, when the money ran out, they stopped the project.
Right.
And then the fishermen stopped bringing the waste. And to the point that there was waste brought in from houses, so not even from the ocean.
Right.
So I think this is one of the reasons for us that's so important, that since the beginning, and it's something we're not changing regardless of where we go and where we expand to, is something the fishermen are, it's a decision they have. So they can do it for the health of their job and their ocean, or they can throw it back. It's a decision they take. And that's something I think very important, no? Because when you see them, they're really doing it because they're worried with the situation.
Yeah, but also I think because it's important for them, because all the waste in the ocean causes, of course, like also that fish are not as... there are not as many fish as there used to before. So actually, the trash is killing their common ground of surviving.
They
so I understand
it.
It even in their own interest. But on the other hand, I feel like maybe we should introduce, because there are more and more severe quotas that fishermen have to deal with. And some of them say like, well, they won't be capable after generations just to provide their family with these quotas because it's not going to be sufficient fish that they can catch and they'll actually make a living out of it. So maybe with the issue that we have, I mean, with 75% of the trash being like on the ground of the oceans, there must be so much stuff that we need to do. And I think it's our duty to do so. So I feel like it will be just fair just to find people who are willing, maybe not only to be fishing, and they still can remain within their environment that they used to, and actually getting paid just to help us. And it has to be paid by taxes, because we are also part of this common problem. So I think it's just fair just to pay them and making a profession out of it, because we also have that within a common city. Wouldn't that be also like a solution? Because it's a good thing by goodwill, but just by fairness, like towards them as a society, shouldn't we actually just put value
in waste?
Wouldn't that be like a step that we should go for?
That could be a step, but then there's more steps to follow, which is you take that waste, but then you also, what do you do with that waste, no? So you need to be able to also have the systems and the technology.
And this is what you're working
in that
on.
Area.
That would be like the next thing that I would lead to into how far are we? Because you said we need technologies. I mean, you already doing it. So what is wrong with the technologies that we're having, and on which terms or ways do they have to be improved?
Improved and existent, no? Because it's depending on where you are. I think for Europe, it's not so much the challenge. It's more for Latin America or for other countries in Southeast Asia. It's being able to have the support and the facilities. So one big challenge is the support and the facilities to be able to transform and to recycle that waste. The other one is the regulations and the different stakeholders you need to speak to that need to approve and that need to be willing to support.
Mm-hmm.
So again, going back to prioritizing these types of helps or of actions, which I think this new decade, we will definitely see more support coming from all the countries, because I really think that it is becoming a very... It has been a hot subject for a long time now, but I think now it's becoming a standard.
And what was the number? I don't know. But again, I'm trying to recall what I read about that. Do you feel that this is still going to be a long way? I mean, although that we're really asking for it, but apparently we're talking about still decades before it might become a common thing. What are the issues that we have to work through in order just maybe to facilitate it, just to make it much faster? Because about 20 years sounds quite a long time.
Yeah, well, I think it's a long way because it's a lot of, how do you say, your...
Say it in German, then I understand your, it.
I wish. it's the routine, no?
By the way, I totally forgot to offer you anything to drink of, so...
Thank you.
Okay, good.
It's more the routine, no, that we have. So I think it needs to be blended into that routine, and that change needs to be then. So it's a change in your behavior. And I think that's one of the most challenging, because it needs to be a change on the way we're doing business and change on how the regulation is standardized in every country, and then a change of the way we live,
right?
And where we put the value on things. So step by step, and what's important is that we are on that track.
Mm-hmm.
And I think 20 years from now Ellen MacArthur Foundation, which is a huge reference for us, says that if we don't change the way we are interacting with the oceans, by 2050, there will be more plastic than fish. And to me, 2050 is not, it's 30 years from now, but it's not that far. So I think it's important that it's started to be embedded in everything that we're doing, to be able to become familiarized and standardized in our day-to-day and in the businesses.
But how can technology and fashion keep up with each other? Because I recall this one talk I had with Javier, the founder of Echo Elf, that he got criticized for the looks, saying like, oh, it's very timeless, it's not really something special. Although, again, it supports the fact if it's timeless, you can wear it like much longer and therefore consume less new stuff. So this is actually a good thing for sustainability. But how do you guys react to those kind of criticisms? Because like, what are you wearing? Absolutely fashionable. So it's a very muy gusto. Or,
I
as I said, my Spanish is really bad. But I'm making you a compliment. People obviously cannot see what it is. But how do you react with those kind of criticism? Is it still happening?
I haven't heard that for a while. I mean, at the end...
Are we talking about a talk I had 2 years ago? That's why I wanted to know, how is it right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's different. I mean, innovation and technology needs to go hand by hand with fashion and sustainability. To me, those three are binded together.
Mm-hmm.
Because technology and innovation is what helps to develop sustainability in the fashion world. And to be able to use new materials that can be developed by this innovation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for us, for a long time, we were working on our designs to make sure they are timeless, simple, and that you feel comfortable with. But maybe we didn't have the colors, or we didn't have the cuts or the feminine cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something we've been working with for the past 3 years. And I think now we have a well-established line for women and a line for men. You're never going to find a fashionable item at Echo Alf, because that's not Echo Alf. I think collaborations is a great way
I was just about to ask that. That would have been one of my follow-up questions. Because you were apparently just yesterday, you were on a pop-up store release where you've been collaborating with the Danish brand Ledeux.
Yes, with Ledeux, yes.
And this is going to be the future of
I think, not sure about the future of Echo Alf, but more in general in the industry, I think collaborations are key. I think for us, since the beginning, we've been a very collaborative brand, because we try to help as much as we can with brands that want to become sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
So to give you an example, Felder and Felder, which maybe you're familiar with, the German sisters.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a collaboration with them with a 100% vegan collaboration of coats, silver coats, which is something maybe that you wouldn't find or you wouldn't wear on your day-to-day. So it's a way for us to show fashion in a sustainable way.
But how far is that collaboration? Is that, does it mean that you more the technology provider, or do you also like help with the designs?
Usually it can be a mix of both, but we are more the technology and the sustainability. We provide that expertise.
Right, and what are the ways of like checking your partners? Because I understand you don't want to work with anyone for that matter, because it could also like have a backlash. Well, how come that you've been working with them? What is your system to screen a company if they're actually the right partner for Ecolife?
Well, I think we're still a very small brand, so there isn't like a system in place. But it's about understanding the values and the vision of that brand, and making sure that it's true, that it's coherent with us. No, so it's that transparency, that coherency, and that commitment that needs to be totally aligned with us. And once we are aligned, then that's something that we go ahead and we do. The other example is Camper. Camper is a very well established footwear brand, Spanish, mm-hmm. and we've been talking with them for a very long time of doing a collaboration that we launched last summer. So their Pelotas, which is their most iconic shoe, mm-hmm. we basically maintain.
Pelotas, I like the word, by the way.
Yes, we maintain their style. But we launched it with our recycled fabric. And we they did a donation for every pair sold. €1 would be donated to the Ecoal Foundation to expand the Upcycling the Oceans project. So there is a collaboration with an impact and with a purpose. Mm-hmm. So it's about sharing our expertise and trying to help them, not to enter the sustainability, and also reaching out to a different audience. And communicating in different communities and different profiles that are maybe not so aware or not so open to sustainability, but seeing it in a brand that they already trust, they come in and they understand, no? That mm-hmm. it is not such a complex or a different world, that it goes hand in hand, and you can have the same design and the same feel, touch, and fit as a non-recycled product. So collaborations to me is a big word in sustainability that will continue to grow.
So in order just to come a bit to the end, where do you see Ecolife in 20 years? Is Ecolife going to remain like a fashion brand? Let's say like in 20 years when everything has become like a standard, it's not going to be like kind of the common or the main claim of being like, sustainable when everything is sustainable. Does it mean that when this goal has achieved, is it going to remain about fashion, or do you think that Ecolife might disappear and it's going to be more about the foundation in general? Because there's always going to be the need of someone who's teaching people about the consequences of our doing. So I think this is something which should last eternally.
We see Ecolife as much more than just a fashion brand. We see Ecolife as a lifestyle experience. So this is one of the reasons why, for instance, we launched yoga. So we want to...
Yeah, what?
Yes, I didn't mention that before.
No, I wasn't aware of that.
We did our first 100% sustainable yoga line 3 months ago. After technology, R&D, and yoga experts trying these pieces, because that was like the number one priority, not to make sure that. Do you practice yoga?
No, I'm not too. I appreciate it, but no.
So, because you have these poses, no, that are so complex and so specific,
right,
to make sure that it would have exactly that
you
flexibility.
You need to be comfortable, not yeah. having like any knits and anything yeah. that is going to change your movement.
So again, against time and no time pressure, when we were ready, we launched. And 3 months ago, we launched with this new Qnova and recycled nylon fabrics. And basically, we want to make sure, as I mentioned at the beginning, that we are in the consumer journey together with them, and what they need, we are there for them. So it's not just fashion, it's that lifestyle experience. So when you visit the store, mm-hmm. you will see, and this is one of the places we met as well at the beginning.
But also at the bread and butter, I think it was at the bread and butter, like some fair, it really seems that Ecolife is really doing like a big effort of having to maintain within this communication, because you're having like a round table where you talk about things, and apparently like the store in yes. Berlin Mitte is like one of these places where this is happening. So this also yes. seems to be part of the
experience. So this is for us part of the so it's much more than the store. No, right. you will see the messages, you will see the videos, the fishermen, what's happening. But then we have a space at the end of the stores that we
the
call
monitors,
Act
like the
Now.
Yeah.
Yes, where we have our screens that we invite people monthly to host their own events, to show their projects. No, projects that have an impact on the planet, on the people, on innovation, on technology, different areas. It doesn't have to be fashion, because what we want to do is bring together all these people, no, and share their voices and raise awareness, no, of doing things, whether if it's coffee or if it's cars or different projects, and I think that's also part of what we're doing, no, we're creating this community much beyond fashion that continues to grow. And this is something we do across all the cities where we have a physical store, because we are there physically. So more a lifestyle brand that continues to inspire and to help people to enter this sustainability world and to enter the way to do things differently.
Which, by the way, is a great USP, because like this is like what most of the offline stores have kind of an issue right now, of not even serving the experience of going shopping or having something that they're bringing home next to like the goods that they've been buying. So this, again, like just from the business point of view, is like a tough choice. And that shows me, again, there is money to be made with sustainable, because I think like one of the reasons that people always are against it, saying like, oh, it's too expensive, people don't really want it. But it seems to be quite the opposite. There seems to be a market. There's a business. And I think there this is. Should be enough motivation for some people really just to hop on the train and actually support that. Or what do you think?
I mean, I think it depends. I mean, expensive, it depends to what you compare it with,
right,
at the end of the day. And also it's the quality and it's going to last. So it's about not having to buy 5 t-shirts in a year, but you buy 2. No, and if a pair of sneakers is 70 euros, that's not an expensive price for a pair of sneakers that will last in your wardrobe.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's ridiculous what people are willing just to pay for some plastic these days.
So,
to be honest, €70.
So I think it's more understanding like what's behind that product,
right,
the longevity that it has, and I think for us in the future it's also about closing the loop. I think that's one of our big challenges that we are headed towards, to be able to in one hand with the innovation work on those materials that even prolong longer the life cycle of the garment,
mm-hmm,
and on the other hand, what do we do at the end? Because that's something we're not doing at the moment. Well, obviously we're still small and there is so much of us. But I think that's another big topic that we would like to start looking into developing at the end of this year, to be able to properly close the loop.
And I'm looking forward to actually follow that. But in the end, now really like for the last one, because I need some advice, because I failed. My idea was at this time for this fashion week in Berlin, having, instead of like every day a different kind of look. I mean, it's a common thing when you're like in the public eye, you might even have like, you switch dresses like 5 times a day just to have like a proper outfit. I felt like I want to have one outfit solely, and just really to make people understand this is about sustainability, and wanted to change a few things. I failed. On the second day, I couldn't wear the jacket anymore because it was so sweaty, it was so stinky, so for hygienic reasons, and I didn't have the time in between just to clean them. So I failed for that matter. So obviously, it's not that easy sometimes just to remain sustainable. So what would have been like your piece of advice? What should I have done just to remain sustainable, but still being flashy and having something to wear?
Well, I don't think you failed, Patrice. I think you basically faced the reality, and I suggest that you pick the pieces that you are comfortable with, that don't have to be 6 pieces.
Right.
So you pick your 2 pieces and your 2 looks, your day and night, and that's what you play throughout the week. But you are a busy man.
Yeah, I am.
You are on the run
right,
constantly, day to day. So maybe for you, you can pick 3 looks.
So that would be okay.
So you are comfortable.
To have more looks than actually intended by reality.
So the most important, I think, is that you remain, you feel comfortable and you're truthful to your way of life, no, and to your what you're doing.
Right.
So it's about your couple of looks that you will be carrying through the week, through the important week.
I see. Well, the thing is, like, you know, I wasn't sure. I thought this is going to be a winter, but apparently weather over here is warmer than in Madrid. So anyway, this is really what confused me the most.
And that's the other challenge.
This is why I was sweating so much, because I'm just wearing like winter clothes. I didn't know that I should come up with shorts or anything like that in order to be part for the winter summer week. I don't think this has to do anything with global warming, anything like that. It just happened to be the way it is. So thank you so much, Carolina Alvarez Osorio, for being our guest. It was a pleasure. And I'm sure our paths will cross again, for that matter.
Thank you, Patrice.
So much. And warmest regards to
everyone. I hope so. Thank you.
Muchas gracias.